Celeb Savant is a career retrospective type interview focusing on singers, actors, and industry experts. Join Barrett Edelstein now as he dives into the entertainment world.
Sipho Hotsticks Mabuse is a legendary South African singer, songwriter, and multi-instrumentalist whose career spans over 50 years. He began playing the drums at the age of 8, the skill that earned him his iconic nickname, Hotsticks. He started his professional journey at 15 with the Afro soul group The Beaters, which later became the groundbreaking Afro rock band Harari, one of the most successful groups of the 1970s. After Harari disbanded, Sipho launched a powerful solo career, reshaping South African pop music with classics like Burnout, Jive Soweto, and the banned anti-apartheid anthem, Chant of the Marching. A true multi-instrumentalist, Sipho has mastered everything from drums and saxophone to piano and flute. He has collaborated with musical giants such as Miriam Makeba, Huma Sakela, Ray Phiri, and Simbungile Khumalo. His influence extends beyond performance. He once owned the iconic Kippies Jazz Club and has served on boards like the National Arts Council and SAMRO. Honored with the South African Music Award Lifetime Achievement Award in 2005, he went on to inspire the nation in 2012 by completing his matric at the age of 60. In 2018, he was further recognized with the Silver Order of Ikamanga, cementing his status as a towering figure in South African culture. Up next on Celeb Savant, we've got Sipho Hotsticks Mabuse. Where are you in the world and how are you doing?
I'm very well. I'm at my home in Soweto, as you can see in the background. That's all my art pieces that I collected all over the world where I've traveled.
When you travel, is that one of your things that you do? You look for an art piece that you like?
Yes, I do.
Okay.
I do. And if you'd come and visit, then you'd see all the pieces on the wall. They're from almost everywhere that I've been. Of course, there are other countries where I never really got to collect stuff.
And I'm sure each one has its own beautiful story.
Absolutely.
Gratefully, when I do travel, there's some things I like to get. I like to get keyrings. You know, the usual stuff. I like to get magnets. And I like to get a T-shirt or a jersey with that place's name on and a couple of other things. So
I do that too. But yeah, a magnet's not really, you know, I've always found those stuff more to be collected by those who like putting things on their fridges and so on.
So now let's go into a fantastic multi-decade journey in the creative world. At what age, whether as a child or teenager, did you say, okay, I want to create music? And how did that journey progress?
You know, Barrett, to be honest, I never really intended. Everything happened by default. It was never really my intentions to become a professional musician. I'd always wanted to be an academic, really. Maybe a doctor, a lawyer, or someone who's more educated, you know, but for some strange reason, I ended up being the musician that I am.
Did you have a thought or an idea at the time before that being a musician, in inverted commas, in your mind, wasn't necessarily a more educated path?
Yes.
Okay.
Because, you know, that we get socialized by society.
Mm, exactly.
All the people that are surrounding you. You realize that these are people who belong to academia. Some of them are nurses, doctors, lawyers, interpreters, and so on. So musicians were considered vagrants, really. People, you know, I mean, even some of our parents would be saying, why don't you find a decent job?
Yes.
So we were socialized like that. Mm. Yeah.
You fell into the path of music. How did you fall into it? And what were those steps?
Again, like I said, it was really by default. I was at high school, thankfully. I was just almost about to complete my matric, which I did not. And I met colleagues who were in a similar position as I was. And, you know, fate always determines how one's life is going to navigate And it was a fundraiser at high school where we just met with these guys, Selby, Alec, and Arthur. And, you know, these guys gave a performance at the assembly at school, and they didn't have a drummer. Trust me, I was not even a drummer then. I played drums in a cadet band. Nothing fancy about a whole drum set and so on. And yeah, lo and behold, they were looking for a drummer, and I presented myself to them to say, hey, I'm a drummer. We can just form a little high school band. Wow. Suddenly, everything was just happening. Here we were demanded by high schools around Soweto because they also came from a different secondary school. You know what is very interesting? Why I'm actually mentioning the fact that fate determines as to how one's life is going to turn out. You know, they came from Deep Kloof. Now, Deep Kloof is about, 5-10 kilometers away from my high school.
Yes.
There was a secondary school. So they couldn't progress to a high school from a secondary school. Okay. And between the two, high school and the secondary school, there was another high school in Orlando, which was Orlando High. They could have gone there because that was much closer to where they were, Deep Kloof. But for some strange reason, they ended up at where I was, which was Orlando West High School. That's how everything just happened. And we ended up having formed this band. And, yo, it was incredible. And we started performing for high schools, all of the high schools in Soweto. We became the toast of the media as high school students because most musicians were considered vagrant, uneducated. Of course, musicians of our era. And we do understand that musicians before us, like the Huma Sekelas, the Miri Makelas, the Jonas Kongwas, the Kipumekis, all of them, most of the time, would have had an education. Some of them worked for newspapers, the classes and so on. But our generation, unfortunately, most of them were not necessarily people who were, you know, drawn by education. So we were a very unique in that sense that we were high school students, and the media really loved us for that.
When you said that sentence just now, you said the sentence that you were drawn to the creative, not necessarily like studied subjects. It's such a shame that society labels creatives as vagrants at the time or find a better job. And creativity is what gives world power, love, and life.
You know, you're so right. You know, at the moment, I always look at how creatives have made a better world for everyone. Mm. And yet, we don't even imagine how important creativity is. I mean, I read a book called A Meaning of Things. Mm-hmm. And the author says there has to be a combination of the arts, science, and the arts to create a holistic, great society. But in our world, we find that the arts are not considered anything of significance to develop a country. Now, I observe as to how much music in particular has contributed to goodness in the world.
Oh, yes.
Take, for instance, the American We Are the World. Take the band Hayden. Take the Free Nelson Mandela concert. It is the artists that have done all the good things about. And I keep saying the America that we love is the one that had Michael Jackson, that had Elvis Presley, you know, that had Stevie Wonder, Bob Dylan. You know what I'm saying? The UK that we love had the Beatles and so on. Why is it the world suddenly has become blinded to the fact that the arts make such a meaningful contribution to the world and to their respective societies?
I think if every president in every country was a person with some arts background, I think the world would be a very different place at the moment.
Absolutely. I couldn't agree with you more. Absolutely. With hindsight, and someone like Bill Clinton who tried to play saxophone, you know, and yeah, maybe we needed more of them that could play piano. They needed to have been brought up to be musicians. And then elect to become the people that they become. you know.
Also, that journey of becoming a musician, creating, booking, staging, all those things, because if they got that foundation, can you imagine what amazing presidents they would be?
Absolutely. Yes, I agree fully. You know, one thing, we should gladly celebrate someone like Nelson Mandela.
Yeah, absolutely.
He used to be elated at watching, and everywhere he would be, he would dance to music.
Wasn't it called the Mandela Jive?
The Madiba Jive.
Madiba Jive, yeah.
I remember how fascinated the French president was when he was here. And suddenly Madiba started standing up when everybody was singing and Madiba was dancing. You should have seen his face, because he never imagined a whole president influential to the whole world standing up with the ordinary people and dancing. That's what the difference made, because exactly. He understood what music meant to the world.
Back to your journey. How long were you with these guys creating music in this band?
We were together for some time. We were together for about 10 years with Selby and Alec. And then Selby died. Unfortunately, that was one of my most painful moments when Selby died. And then suddenly Alec and I were the only two left. But we continued for another 5 years and made quite good success as a band, an Afro rock band. Of course, we had brought in other musicians to continue the journey that Selby, Alec, and I had started.
Okay.
You know? Wow. The Harare became a household name in South Africa. We even had record deals with international record companies. I mean, Harare was signed to A&M Records, which was another musician's record company, Herb Alpert and Jerry Moss. So you can imagine what music meant to us. I would say 15 years at most was the time that I spent with my colleagues.
Obviously, it comes with playing the drums, but at what point was Hot Sticks given as a name of yours?
Well, I think there's this misnomer, if I may say, to think that I was at 8 years when I became Hot Sticks. No, it's not actually correct, because the name came as I was a professional from a colleague when I played a drum solo for about 30 minutes. And in the 30 minutes that I made a drum solo, all I could hear was just this applause from the audience. I was almost spiritual in my play. And after the drum solo, one of my colleagues, Conrad Zikulu, came and he said, "Sure, you know, like in township patois, where you would say, in Fana, you know, we are Shisa," which meant your heart.
After the group, you went solo. Tell us about that journey.
Yeah, that again, it was also by default. There was never an intention at some stage on my part to think that I'd go solo. You know, there's a tendency, unfortunately, for bands to break up because of one thing or another, most probably envy. And because I was the band leader and the media focused a lot on me, some of my colleagues were not happy with it. And when we got to the States, I mean, we were at the top of everything. We had just been signed with this record company and we were receiving so much money that's never, ever been imagined in the South African context. And of course, jealousy and envy started creeping and we were fighting over minor things and so on. And the band split right in America. I must say, I was devastated. I didn't actually imagine that I could be a solo artist because I was a drummer. When you're a drummer, you're always in the background. Yes, even though I was the band leader, and probably the songwriter all the time. But even then, I was still a band leader. Mm. I was still a drummer. I could not see myself being in the front line. Hey, and when I look back, I realized that, in fact, most of the drummers ended up being frontmen in their own bands. I mean, if you take someone like Phil Collins,
yeah,
and people like Steve Wonder, Al Jarreau, I can name the list. There's so many of them. Teddy Pendergrass, they ended up being frontmen. And it took me a year, of course, to consider whether I still wanted to continue with music. But once a calling becomes a calling, I mean, 15 years of life making music, how would one decide, well, I'm going to do something else? And I started writing songs, getting myself into the studio and just dabbling with things, just making all the mess. Strange enough, you know, my journey has been very interesting because everything seems to have happened by default. Nothing prepared for whatever is going to come. And suddenly when I started writing these songs, they were just big songs. They were hit songs. And hey, now I have to start performing as a front person.
Did you find that challenging? Because people have comfort zones. Okay, I teach spinning classes. The bikes are not pre-booked. First come, first serve. The same person will go to the same bike for this every week for 10 years. And if someone's in their bike, they get so cross. How can they be on their bike? So that people make comfort zones in small areas. Potentially, you had created a comfort zone around the drums. And how did you diffuse that in order to stand up front?
Well, because I had written the songs, even though I was singing them, even though I could have sang the songs as a drummer. But then, because I was solo, I wasn't belonging to a band. There was just a natural transition for me to make as to, okay, I've written these songs. Now it's for me to consider whether I can go up front and sing. I must say it was daunting. It was a challenge because a lot of people didn't consider me a singer. They've always known me as a drummer. And still, you know, to be honest, I don't consider myself a, yes, I can sing, you know, to save my life. But I mean, there are great singers out there. Making popular music, you don't have to be an opera singer. You make popular music. I mean, could one say Mick Jagger is a great singer? Of course he's not.
What you bring and artists bring who may not necessarily be, in inverted commas, amazing singers, you bring the energy, you bring the crowd together, you bring the passion, you bring all those things together. Yes. Whereas another person who may even have, I don't want to say better, whatever, singing voice, they can't bring all of those together and knit a beauty of magic.
I know, I agree. I think the advantage I had was having belonged to a band for almost 20 years. And that made the difference for me because then I had learned how vocalists and the lead front men would always be doing things. And I was driving the band from the back as a drummer. I observed and absorbed some of the way I eat those things. And in a way, it helped me to be able to be a front person for myself as a solo artist, not for a band.
Exactly.
But I would have a band, of course.
I think watching for those years at the back gave preparation because you're observing, but you're also studying, not necessarily knowing for what at the time, but you could tap into that when the next steps arrived.
Yes, exactly. Exactly. That's how I got prepared.
What keeps motivating you to get on stage and perform and create music?
I know nothing else. It brings me joy. It brings me peace. It is something that I cherish. It is something that I always look forward to because you are immune to all the other influences that are negative. You know, music brings out the positive in human soul. And that's what I find myself continuing to do what I do. I couldn't imagine if I didn't make music, how life would be like.
I mean, I don't create music, but music is very much a big part of my life. I love listening to it. I love following the charts, speaking to great artists.
I know when you're writing those, when you're training the spinning and there's music behind.
Yes. You know? My head is going mad. Absolutely.
I know.
If music wasn't part of my life, I think I'd be a very sad person. What can you tell us is coming up next?
All the things that I speak about, I think they call for sharing experiences with future generations. Mm-hmm. I mean, to be in the music industry and still be relevant after 58 years is no mean feat. I get asked these questions. How did you make it this far? You know, I've been in South Africa most of my life. Yes, I have traveled all over the world, but most of the people that, you know, made it out here from this country had been out of this country. And I mean, others were in America, UK, Europe, and so on. But I've been here, you know, and this is, I think, what makes a difference. I mean, South Africa is not such a great, big country where you could sustain yourself musically throughout the, you know, 5-6 decades. But one made it. It's the dedication. It's the love for it. It's what I live for that has kept me going. So what I do now is I'm writing memoirs. I share my own personal experiences about what it is to be and how it became that I am a musician. And still to date, I'm still the musicians that one people would love to listen to. And also I'm in the studio recording my next album, which was totally different to what people know me for.
Why did you decide for this one to be different?
To be honest, Bart, I've never been a formatted musician. Mm-hmm. I've never believed that a creative person needs to be formatted because of a particular success. You know, because when you start becoming formatted because you want to attain this success as of your last album, then you get sidetracked in terms of what creativity is all about. I create music as I feel. I create music as I feel necessary to be a different person. Perhaps that's what has also sustained me beyond, you know, the years beyond Burnout. I mean, Burnout had been recorded 40 years ago. Jive's Away to Ring, you know, all those songs. Yes, I am very proud to be the composer of those songs. Mm. But I think life allows one to evolve, to create other things beyond what is commercially successful.
Exactly.
And I've always considered myself more of a musician rather than just a commercial success.
So saying what you're saying about being in the industry for 58 years, I think a very strong part of that would be staying true to your authenticity and not allowing those voices of, okay, we need another hit. We should be in the genre. It needs to be ready for TikTok. You know, all these type of things to filter you. Like, no, I'm just creating. And I think the people that get lost in all those voices sometimes just lose completely.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. Fortunately, I've always been in a position to give orders rather than receive. You know, I would say to the record company people, listen, the fact that you've always been selling my music, none of you had been in the studio with me to create that music. You've always received it from me. And whatever I create now, it would always be the same. You would listen to what I've done, and you won't make a determination as to whether it's something that you want to go with. Fortunately, I've always had a great relationship with the people that I worked with.
Yes.
And it made it easier for me to diversify in the kind of music that I make.
I think it's very important for the business side of the industry, not necessarily understand, respect and sort of believe in the creative's process. I may be misspeaking. I get a sense a lot of business-sized people, okay, we want it like this in this time and it needs to be like this. And then that loses creativity.
Absolutely. If creatives would allow themselves to be dictated to by trends, then it would be unfortunate because trends come and they go.
Exactly.
So does one stay with those trends and, you know, and stop thinking ahead and evolving? And if one were to look at the era and the age in which they created certain music, those people that appreciated that music have grown up. So you need to be able to grow up with the audience that you created at a particular time.
Yes.
Because it's true to understand that they probably would be appreciating new things, new ideas, new thinking.
Agreed. But then keeping that innocence of what you created before in the new stuff. For example, when the first hits came from any artist, there was that innocence, that newness, that, and then they came into their journey. So allowing the new stuff to come, but then maintaining that innocence that they used to create the original stuff. I feel I may be observing incorrectly, but I think that's important.
Well, it is, but you remember that one grows with the audience that you have created at a particular time. And of course, you don't lose sight of the fact that those people appreciated one for creating a particular music. And that music will always be part of that journey as you go ahead.
Being in the industry for a number of decades, the main changes that you've seen for better and maybe for worse?
IT, technology. I think there was a time when technology, the evolution, for instance, of the recording, which was great. You know, you had vinyl, which was wonderful because there were sales that were going on. And when you people buy, there were tapes people were buying, even though there was, you know, with tapes, of course, it introduced a negative element to it where people could just record dub music without buying it. But it also was a journey, you know, the IT area in which these challenges began. And as it evolved, and then we had the CDs, but with the tapes on, with all the other stuff where one could record on top, the stick and so on, some of these things really had a negative impact on some of the people who were creating, because suddenly the fruits of one's creativity were limited by the fact that other people were pirating the music and so on. We're still now, we are into this IT thing that says the streaming, you know, and the returns are very minimal. Spotify, Deezer, and all these streaming platforms, trust me, they have just, I think it's almost decimating the creativity or the creatives' lives. We're still now with the AI. The most difficult era for creatives.
Well, let's focus on the positive side of it. And now, I love this game. I know if I had to ask you this question in 2 days or 5 years, I understand your answer will be different. So I'm not saying favorite. I'm saying top of mind. Once we finish this conversation, if you want to listen to five other artists, who would those five artists be? Just off the top of your head.
Wow. I love so much music. Stevie Wonder would be at the top of my head. Ray Charles would have been at the top of my head. Miles Davis would have been at the top of my head. The Beatles would be at the top of my head. Sting would be at the top of my head.
The podcast is listened to throughout the world. As a final message to the audience, what would you like to say?
Let's keep supporting the creatives. You know, let's keep the creatives at the forefront of everything well that we're doing, and appreciate the fact that all we do is to bring joy to people. We never intend any harm. I think if anyone wants to imagine the world without creatives or music, it would be the worst world to live in.
Yes.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Celeb Savant. Please follow Barrett on TikTok, Instagram, YouTube, and Facebook at Celeb Savant. That's CelebSavant.